This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
You're listening to an iFanboy special edition podcast on Ant-Man.
So much for small talk. The big idea somehow snuck in. When we weren't looking, scared away. The light-hearted laughter of our innocence. And it was replaced by a poker-faced need to draw.
Welcome to an iFanboy special edition podcast on the movie Ant-Man. I'm Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Mike Romo.
Hey, hey.
And we are from the website iFanboy.com, which usually is talking about comic books on a weekly basis. But every now and then, comic books cross over into another medium like movies. It happens quite a bit, actually.
Every so often.
And so then we come here to talk about that movie to help you vent or agree with or whatever your opinion of the movie is. We're here for you. That's why we do it. It's a service. We love you.
Yell at us while you're driving. No,
that's wrong. Exactly. As mentioned, Ant-Man is the latest entry into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is the movie that stars Paul Rudd with a little bit of controversy in that it was originally developed by Edgar Wright, who then unceremoniously walked away from it.
Well, this was actually one of the first movies that was developed. This has been developed for like 10 years. They've been doing this one before, I think, before even Iron Man was in development.
So Edgar Wright and Joe Cornish started developing this back in 06, I think, or so. Yeah. And then for difficulties or issues with Marvel Studios, Edgar Wright walked away. Peyton Reed picked up the gauntlet and directed it. And it stars Paul Rudd, Michael Douglas, Evangeline Lilly, Bobby Cannavale, Michael Pena. And so it just came out. We all saw it. So.
Well, what's interesting, before we get into what we thought of it, was that, you know, the joke on the show every week has been, I guess we're going to go see Ant-Man.
There
wasn't a whole lot of excitement. I love all these Marvel movies, and I wasn't super excited for this one.
When I was walking to the theater, I was like, okay, how am I just going to not roll my eyes for 2 hours? And even I was not interested in seeing this movie at all. I had no interest. Well,
and that was really the question. I mean, it was funny because I know last summer when Guardians was coming out, we're all going, oh, Guardians of the Galaxy, that's going to be the flop and whatever. And it turned into this enormous, you know, like enormous hit and enormous, you know, phenomenon. And so now all eyes move to Ant-Man. Like, okay, well, Ant-Man. And you know, I was really curious because, like, here's the thing: on paper, you know, like, I'm a huge Paul Rudd fan.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, it takes place in San Francisco. I live in San Francisco. Like, on paper, there's a lot of things I can go with it, but it is kind of curious: is how does it fit in, and how is it going to apply in with the tone, especially with the work that Edgar Wright was doing, who has a different aesthetic than what the Marvel directors have been doing. And so, okay, before we get any further, just want to, it's a spoiler, you know, spoiler warning. We're going to talk about the events of the movies, minute.
A lot to spoil, too.
Minute details. Yeah. So if you haven't watched the movie yet, press pause.
Oh, you.
Tiny, tiny details.
I just realized.
Granular. Connor,
I forgot the spoiler warning in our
You're still getting back into it.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, we'll get emails about that. Okay, so so Mike, you went in begrudgingly. Connor, you weren't very excited. I was mildly excited. So coming out of it, how did you feel, Mike?
I was amazed how much I laughed throughout the film. I left actually in a much better mood than I anticipated. Like, I really enjoyed it. I was really thrilled to see everybody around me like really laughing with really good guffaws. I mean, there were some really good moments here, and even from the story point of view, I really enjoyed how this is a smaller movie. I mean, there were sort of world-changing repercussions that could have happened, but I like that this wasn't sort of an end-of-the-world type thing. This is much more of a localized movie. It wasn't, I wouldn't say street level like a Daredevil, but I was really kind of thrilled just how much I enjoyed it.
Connor?
Similar to Mike, I thought it was really funny, really enjoyable. I think there's some problems. We'll get into those in a bit, but I think what Mike said is the most important thing is that this was a very, and there's going to be so many fucking puns, this was a very small movie in terms of, this was basically a heist film. You know, it's totally. Ant-Man versus Yellow Jacket for a piece of technology that he's trying to steal, and there's like Mike said, there's repercussions for the world if the technology gets out. But at the end of the day, it's just a heist film, and they're not fighting a god. They're not fighting an alien invasion. They're not, you know, it's just Ant-Man trying to steal something. And I thought that was really smart to vary the genre. It's a superhero movie, but it's not a superhero movie. It's a heist film mostly.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I definitely agree there. I mean, so to answer the original question, I walked out of it. I enjoyed it. I liked it. I thought it was enjoyable. I don't think it was like I walked out going, well, that's not going to be a Guardian success.
Right.
You know, like, and we got to stop looking at these movies and expecting it to be the highest grossing movie of all time.
You can't do that. It's not diminishing returns.
The Guardian success just is out of the blue anyway, still for me, honestly.
I can't explain that still.
Yeah.
But
there are a lot of bits about this movie that, like, I liked it, but it's just funny because.
All right, well, let's get into what we didn't like first.
Going to what you were saying about the tone of it being a heist movie. Yes, it was a heist movie, and the whole idea is that Paul Rudd's a burglar, and you get all the sense and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, it's kind of just Iron Man again.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like it was almost, you know, like the exact same third act as Iron Man.
Well, and find a suit, blah blah blah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like there's a suit, and then there's a business partner who betrays him.
Learn how to use the suit.
Yeah, I mean, it's Jeff Bridges, Ironmonger, bald guy, Yellow Jacket.
Yeah, well, there you go. I didn't even think of that, but it's pretty similar.
And the podcast.
Well, for me, it's the least skillfully directed of all the films I've seen from Marvel. There's not a lot of flair. I don't want to say it's workmanlike, but it gets the job done. And there's some good bits in it, for sure. We'll talk about those when we get to the parts that we like.
Yeah.
But for a character like Ant-Man, whose world's constantly changing, he goes through, you know, there's a lot of visual stuff to play with there that really doesn't get played with. And so that's where you really feel the loss of Edgar Wright, is you feel like that movie would have been really visually interesting more than one was.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, what frustrated me about the movie and being an Edgar Wright fan is that you see the glimmers of what he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because the initial story and screenplay like was written by him and Joe Cornish, and then actually Adam McKay and Paul Rudd went in and did a polish to do what they eventually shot. And of course, it's not directed by Edgar Wright, but like the scenes where Paul Rudd's friend is recounting what happened.
Those are the most interesting.
Yeah, that's super funny.
You're right.
And it was totally an Edgar Wright thing. I mean, it reminded me of Spaced. You know, like
Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, like, it was so every now and then you saw glimmering moments of what could have been with Edgar Wright, and then when that wasn't happening, what I saw was a very safe-by-the-numbers movie.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the most disappointing thing, I think, for me, is that you know, you can go really, really strange with the visuals of Ant-Man. I mean, when he gets tiny, the world gets gigantic, and you can really play with that. And it didn't happen. And that's fine.
It was Honey, I Shrunk the Superhero movie.
Right.
Well, and what was interesting is, like, and Andy Edgar Wright did the same kind of story retelling in Scott Pilgrim, to great effect, too, right? That probably was the funniest part to me, which had nothing to do with the superhero story at all, which might be a problem.
Well, Michael Pena stole every scene he was in.
Connor and I ended up accidentally seeing it in 3D.
Yeah.
And I was surprised how... total lost opportunity, right? We're talking about, we could have seen seas of different ants and all that, but also when he goes into the subatomic level, that movie should have opened up. And visually, the film, I agree, it was pretty workmanlike. The one I didn't want to see it in 3D, but I thought, wow, this could be kind of cool once I saw what they were doing with the story, and was disappointed that they just didn't take advantage of the format at all, so I wonder why they did it. But I did, one thing that really stuck with me is that when Paul Rudd ran like Ant-Man, it totally reminded me of the comic for some reason, and I had no idea that I had such an emotional reaction to that little guy running with a big helmet. It was really funny how he ran. But visually, I just thought it was fine. There was some good flair, like the Thomas the Train Engine landing on top of the cop car. Was the visual that every time it showed on the screen, the audience started laughing.
Yeah.
So there was a stylistically... it might have not been that impressive, but the shots themselves, there were some that really stuck out really well, and some nice. I thought it was pretty well edited, but yeah, visually it didn't.
The editing
do much.
Was good. The cuts were good.
The cuts were good.
Well, I think what saves the film, and I don't think the directing.
Speaking of Avengers,
I don't think the directing hurts the film. But what saves the film is the cast. The cast really elevates it beyond what the filmmakers did.
So that kind of leads into, I mean, I think that kind of leads into what was good about it. At least for me, I mean, like, I'm a huge Paul Rudd fan as well. And I thought his performance was great, but he was just being Paul Rudd, I thought. Similar to, you know, how we kind of laughed at when Robert Downey Jr. played Iron Man, and we're like, well, he's just being Robert Downey Jr.
Right.
You know, but I think this almost works better because I had no preconceived notions about who Scott Lang is. Like, Scott Lang, from a character standpoint, to me, was just a blank slate.
Right.
Yeah.
And I thought Paul Rudd really stepped in and really kind of owned it and gave it the stakes and the heaviness that you needed, you know, with his daughter and coming out of prison and all that sort of stuff. But then injected the humor and the Paul Rudd-esque humor, the Wet Hot American Summer-esque, you know, kind of, you know.
Totally.
Right. I thought he was great.
What they need to do now they've got all these movies and all these characters, that they have to start introducing different kinds of characters. And so Scott Lang, who we all know, or if you don't pay attention, you'll now know, that is in the Civil War movie. It's going to be interesting to see that guy, who's not a superhero, who's not really super brave even until the very end, thrust into the Avengers action.
Yeah.
You know, what's he going to be like with Captain America? That's going to be an interesting scene. And that same way, I'm excited for a super young Spider-Man, to throw a kid into the mix will also change the dynamic up. So that's why, going forward, they really have to, I think, vary these characters so that you've got these interesting dynamics in the groups and their settings.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of the whole... It was like, it was its own movie, but it definitely tried to say, look, I'm still part of the cinematic universe. I there was the Avengers reference. There was that funny laugh line. Well, the first thing we should do is just call the Avengers.
Which I thought
was a pretty good line. But I thought it was really interesting, the whole, you know, Falcon... Yeah. Has this sort of interesting cameo. It's like they called him in. Can you hang out with us for an afternoon?
No, but I thought that was great because that was. This is okay. So it was. What was funny was that what I was thinking about that during that scene was that like they talk about Marvel and the phases and all that bullshit and stuff like that. But if you ask me, the first batch of all the movies, Iron Man, Thor, all this stuff, was all them doing in their own little world.
Yeah.
And then the Avengers movies brought them together to interact. But now we're getting basically what we want, which was the shared universe, but in the movies. Right. Where,
every day.
Yeah.
The where everyday universe.
Yeah, because like the whole thing, like we talked about, like when Thor 2 came out, like when, you know, London's getting destroyed or England's getting destroyed, like why didn't he just call the Avengers? Like why didn't, you know, like, and like, well, it's not his own movie. But this, like, it's in a world where the Avengers exist, and he is going to go steal something from an old Stark base, which, oh, that's the Avengers base, and of course he's going to run into an Avenger. And, like, I thought that was a good way to now expand what they built and see the characters interact and crisscross. I thought it was great. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
I thought there might have been a few more guards.
Yeah.
Once Falcon is, like, actually fighting some dude, you think there'd just be... Yeah. Maybe somebody.
So, yeah.
But I enjoyed it. I thought that fight sequence was really actually quite well done.
And it was funny. I mean, like it was like it had that Marvel sense of humor, but right. It was a fight scene, but it was like interesting in the use of the powers and all. I don't know. I thought that was a high point of the movie.
So, quick step back, just in case people do listen to these shows without seeing the movies. It's strange as it sounds. So the quick story elements or the plot is that Dr. Hank Pym, who was a secret superhero in the 1980s, he was Ant-Man in the 80s. Developed the Pym particle, and S.H.I.E.L.D. wanted it for their soldiers, but he wouldn't give it to them, so he went into retirement and developed his company. In flashback to the future, his daughter is running the company with Darren Cross, who will become Yellowjacket, and Pym's been pushed out into retirement. But he sees that Darren Cross is developing this Yellowjacket technology, which is a knockoff of the Ant-Man technology, and he gets Scott Lang, who is a newly released con, he orchestrates a Scott Lang going to steal that technology as Ant-Man. And so this is basically Ant-Man going in to steal the Yellowjacket technology, running into Yellowjacket and having a big old brawl. And then there's, I really liked, the flashback to Ant-Man and Wasp in action really quickly. And
one of the best sequences. I love that part.
And then what was really great is that, we're going to get a Wasp going forward, but B, they've set up that Janet Van Dyne, so Evangeline Lilly plays Hope Van Dyne, the daughter of Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne.
Yeah.
Janet can come back, and she'll still be young, because she gets sucked into the subatomic universe, or whatever it was called, where time doesn't have any effect. So they're clearly setting up that she's going to come back and be young again, still be young. So that'll be an interesting thing that'll happen, if they ever make another Ant-Man movie.
Well, no, and I think, we'll see how this one performs to see if they do that. But they definitely laid the groundwork for that sort of thing. And it's a character that I would revisit. I would see this sort of adventure again.
Part of me would love it if it was an Ant-Man and Wasp movie, right? Seeing those two work together, and I think Evangeline Lilly could really, really pull it off, even with that haircut. I just thought it was too severe. I know it's the right haircut. I just thought it was too severe on screen. But maybe this is a great way to have a real team-up movie and have that relationship dynamic.
Yeah, I think that's where a great idea.
Yeah, you just haven't seen that really work before.
Yeah.
And I thought she would be terrific in it. And seeing them work together as a superhero team and then be a couple, that could be really, really fun.
Let me mention one more quick thing that I didn't like, and that has to do with the flashback. In the very beginning, so we see a young Michael Douglas meeting with S.H.I.E.L.D. and it's old Peggy Carter. I thought the effects in young Michael Douglas were pretty strong, even though you could see a little bit where they were computer manipulating.
Yeah, it
still
pretty
looked
well
pretty
done.
Good.
Yeah.
I love John Slattery.
Yes.
I love John Slattery.
Me too.
He played Howard Stark in Iron Man 2, the film we all just agreed as a group to forget ever existed.
What are you talking about?
And so we've already seen a lot of Howard Stark in Captain America and in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Agent Carter.
Yep.
And Dominic Cooper's done a great job making that character his own. And to age up Hayley Atwell with makeup to make her old Peggy Carter, but then not use Dominic Cooper and instead bring back John Slattery threw me completely for a loop.
Oh, I was fine with it. In fact, so much so that opening scene, I was like, I want to see this movie.
Listen, I love John Slattery. I feel like the character has been taken over by Dominic Cooper, and they should have just aged him up. And I don't, it took me out of that scene because you have the other actors there playing their characters from before, but him. And so that just was weird.
Did we know that the scene was in the movie? I mean, like, we heard that?
No, I didn't know that.
And when Hayley Atwell started speaking, I heard audible gasps.
There was gasps in the audience.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a few of those. We'll get to one that happened in the post-credit sequence. I'm pretty sure it was an orgasm that happened in the theater.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
We'll get to that when we talk about the post-credit
sequence. Then I smelled cigarette smoke, and it was weird. Very relaxed. Let's talk a little bit, I guess, about the casting. I think the real breakout here is Michael Peña, who really was this wonderful sort of – humorous and emotional anchor throughout the film, and the trope that they did use twice when he's retelling this story about, you know, that setting up whatever the situation was really funny with him at a wine tasting or at the art gallery. But little small things like that, which probably was the red polish, that just, I thought it really opened up the story a bit. It wasn't just so one note. It really added this sort of other, sort of off-kilter sense of humor to it, and whenever he was on the screen, you couldn't help but laugh. So I thought, I really appreciated that casting.
Yeah, Like we said, Michael Pena kind of stole the show, but I think the supporting cast was really strong. I mean, like the entire, you know, not just Michael Pena, but the other two guys, like the driver and then the hacker, like the team, you know, like, yeah. I love, it's funny after watching, you know, now several years of Arrow and sure. Flash, like it's no longer just the hero, but now the hero's got a team.
Yeah. You gotta have a team.
Yeah. Yeah.
You gotta have a crowded department.
Yeah. Which is, yeah.
And I love actually Bobby Cannavale as with his buddy as sort of the bumbling Keystone Cops following them around. He actually he did really well making that character more than just the one note that it could have easily been on the page.
Right.
Yeah.
You get a real sense that he cared for the daughter, but respected the relationship that Paul Rudd had with the daughter and just how tricky that was also being a cop. So I thought he had actually a pretty complex role to do.
And he got to be a little bit heroic at the end, too. He got to
and a good guy, legitimately good guy.
Yeah.
He could have very easily been the jerky, you know, stepfather, but he was not, which makes it more interesting. It was a great dynamics. I thought Michael Douglas did well, you know, in the gravitas role of bringing in the established Hollywood actor to lend credence to the Marvel movie. But, you know, he doesn't do a lot because he's
well, but, old Hank but what Pym. What he did was I thought was super nuanced was that so we know as comic fans, we know who Hank Pym is.
Right. Sure.
And we know about Hank Pym's history and we all know about the Wasp wife beating and all the stuff like that. So we know that. Never mention it, never bring it up, never refer to it in the movie, yet gives us hints of this unsuppressed anger that Hank Pym has.
And also the fact that using the suit sort of unhinged him.
Yeah.
That it had mental consequences to being Ant-Man.
Right.
Well, when they had that meeting, the flashback in the seven, I thought that when he says, you know what happened to your wife or whatever.
Yes.
I thought that was a reference to that.
Right.
So I thought that was a nod.
And the thing was, maybe it was.
Maybe
you know,
it was.
Yeah.
No, he said you couldn't save Janet. That's clearly a reference to her dying.
Yeah. Well, but the thing is, for us as comic fans, we read that as it meant to be read. It doesn't say it. It doesn't try to introduce it to somebody who doesn't have any clue.
Right, but it gave us something.
It gives us that context. And I thought – but I thought the anger side of Michael Douglas was really – was a nuanced performance by him, and that was very good. So.
And you saw it a little bit when he gets mad at Lily – Evangeline Lilly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, and any time, you know, like when he punches Darren Cross in the thing, you know, like it's like he, you know, he's got this anger side to him that you know is bubbling under the surface. So
did you guys know that the tank would large as soon as you saw it?
No.
As soon as I saw it, and then we saw it again. I was like, oh, that tank is a real tank.
The scene right before, like he flashed to it when he entered the building. I'm like, that's got to be something.
Because he had to drop it into the thing. Yeah, it was.
Now that you say it now, but I didn't
the
see it.
Well, they done here great also trick. With so he's got these discs. The red shrinks Ant-Man using the technology, and the blue enlarges him. And so now I think they can set up him also being Giant Man, because he could use blue discs as a regular guy and get bigger. So there's a lot. There's a lot of groundwork being laid here. I hope it does well enough to do more, because I do like these characters. I like Paul Rudd as Ant-Man. I like Michael Douglas. I'd like to see a Ant-Man Wasp team-up movie. I'd like to see Janet's story explored. I'd like to see all those things. So I hope that this is successful enough that we get to see those things.
Like I said, I would gladly see the Ant-Man 80s movie.
Right.
With Haley Campbell as an older Agent Carter. Like that just, I mean, and John Slyer, like all of them, Michael Douglas, like just do it.
But it's a good movie. Like I could see like dads taking their kids to this movie. Like this is a nice Saturday afternoon movie. And I think the real problem is it has been marketed really, really badly. Right. And there's no sense of this teamwork, this team behind Ant-Man, there's none of the humor comes out. You really just have sort of these sort of tropes of, you know, the bad guy speaking bad things to the good guy type stuff and fighting. Yeah. And I think they're missing a real opportunity. So this is sort of a celebration of what makes Marvel really fun, is a community of characters working together to achieve something. And there's a, and by the way, you'll laugh a lot. And I hope that the, Connor and I were both saying as we were leaving the theater, I hope the word of mouth does something, because this is a fun day. I, it didn't really stick with me. This is the most I've talked about it since I've seen it. Yeah. But like, the yeah, more I talk about it, the more I go, yeah, I really enjoyed it. I would totally, my advice would be, you should totally go see it. It's super fun.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Like, it's not the kind of thing where I came out of the theater and I had to, like, run to the phone to call my family to tell them to go see this movie. But if someone's like, hey, what should I do this week? I'm like, oh, go see Ant-Man. You'll enjoy it. You know, like, it's very much that. And I think that, I guess the box office estimates are, we're saying, like, 60 million or whatever it is, which feels about right. I mean, like, 60 to 80, I would say, would be about right. I mean, although we live in a world where Minions made 115 million in one weekend, so.
I don't know. What
which I love those Minions. I love them.
I don't know.
But, yeah, no. I mean, the thing is,
we talked about when Guardians came out that was going to be the real test of the Marvel brand, right? Can they launch anything? And I guess we underestimated the charisma of Chris Pratt or the giant space action, but this is the test.
Yeah.
This is the test of what can Marvel launch?
Well, no, it's not so much, I don't think this is the test of what can Marvel launch, because I think that they've clearly done it, they've launched it. This is the test to what will Marvel accept. And what will Marvel and Disney accept? Will they take a movie that opens to a $60 million opening weekend and say that's okay because that's what our expectation was? Or do they expect, you know, Iron Man, Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy's performance?
I mean, not to talk about their business, but I feel like they can't expect that every time.
No, they can't. It's just not realistic. No, right. But again, not to talk about their business, but we have some familiarity with these people, right, and some, you know, and sometimes expectation.
Yeah, people, exactly. They ain't normal.
These people, they're not normal. They're not normal. But all right. Well, before we talk about the end credit sequence, I think a good lead in is that various Easter eggs that were caught. Did you guys catch interesting things?
Like what?
Well, in the first presentation by Darren Cross about Yellow Jacket, when he's talking about the rumors of the Ant-Man, he said they're tales to astonish.
That was hilarious. Yeah. And then that was a big laugh line in the theater as well.
Yeah, because, you know, nerds. So Agent Carter.
Not so much an Easter egg.
Yeah. That's a bit of an Easter egg.
That's an Easter egg.
That's an Easter egg. Yeah. That, the Tales to Astonish. At the very, very end, when Michael Payne is telling the story.
I think I know what you're about to say.
About the friend who talked to Falcon and the reporter.
Yeah,
and right. Falcon says, "We're looking for somebody." He's like, "Well, we got lots of people. There's a guy who climbs walls and swings and whatever, and like basically describes Spider-Man."
Yeah.
So that's neat.
That was the first Spider-Man reference in Marvel Universe Marvel Cinematic Universe. So, good time.
Nailed that too. It was hilarious.
That whole I loved those sequences, the flashback sequences where they're telling the story. Yeah. Those were great. So there's two credit sequences. In the first one, the mid credits is when Hank finally acquiesces and he brings his daughter Hope down to the basement where there's a Wasp suit for her, and he finally decides it's okay for her to become the Wasp. That was great. And that it's nice.
That got some applause too. Like I felt like, okay. Also, it's nice to see a woman getting, like, she was clearly the hero, right? She should have been the hero throughout the movie, and it's nice to see. I feel like people in the audience were like, great, this is good. This is the good direction for the story to go.
Plus, you know, the Wasp and Ant-Man are the last two founding Avengers from the comics that really haven't been shown in the movie, so this is sort of finally rounding that out. But you're right. I mean, this is, if you're talking about the first female Marvel lead, you know, why not the Wasp?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and then the other one happens at the very end, which is, I thought pretty shocking that it happened in this manner, was Falcon showing Cap that he had found Winter Soldier, and Winter Soldier was like tied up in a broiler room.
I thought that was like a garage and he was working on a car.
I didn't even know who it was.
That was a very murky scene.
That happened so quickly. I didn't know what was going on.
Well, you were distracted because the woman had the orgasm when Chris Evans showed up on screen.
That's totally what happened. Stage right.
She was just went,
oh. It was really uncomfortable. I mean, it was, you know, intriguing. But it was, everyone was in the shadows, and I was like, I recognize the guy, and then everybody's gasped, and I'm like, why don't I recognize him enough? And then it was over. And then, like, but I clearly lost some geek cred there. I was like, what the hell?
But it was interesting that they, you know, the whole crux of the end of Winter Soldier was we got to go find Bucky, and they find him, and it happens at the end of Ant-Man. yeah. which was weird. But
he's working at a Namco.
He does oil changes. so that's going to kick off, clearly kicking off.
Should we say anything about the bad guy? I mean, I guess he was just sort of one note. I mean,
yeah, I mean, yeah. It was Jeff Bridges. I mean, that was, you know, but he was bald. Yeah, think about it. Look at that.
Corey Stoll.
Think about it this thing.
He would have, I feel like he should play every role as Hemingway. But
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
If he can't do that, he's, you know, he's a good actor. He's fine.
Just a couple other things. The Flophouse halfway house hotel that Paul Rudd and Michael Peña are staying at is called the Milgram Hotel. Al Milgram, who wrote West Coast Avengers, which you know featured a lot of these characters. I caught that.
Yeah, I caught that too. You're right.
Yeah. Also, it's the address is 420, which is in San Francisco. There was a funny scene when Paul Rudd is in, he's in the bathroom with the suit. He's discovering it, and it's raining outside.
Yeah,
I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, and it doesn't rain in San Francisco anymore. It hasn't rained here in months.
I'm like, what? Yeah, but they've been working on this film a long time.
Yeah, and I did like and Easter egg or joke or whatever. But when Michael Peña was whistling and he's hiding as the guard, he's whistling "It's a Small World." That made me laugh. Disney, you know, that made me laugh. But what I thought was interesting was that the whole Paul Rudd shrinking into the subatomic level, like, is that like? Is that planting the seeds for a Micronauts movie?
God, I hope not.
I mean, that's basically what the Micronauts are. I mean, that's what it is.
Is it anything else in the Marvel Universe?
No.
There's nothing else that happens in the subatomic.
Nope. Universe. That is completely the Microverse.
Huh.
Yeah.
Isn't that how they brought back the Wasp in the comics? Was she had been living in the subatomic world?
Oh,
and she was like queen of the subatomic world.
Yeah, that happened in Avengers with Bendis. So maybe. Who knows?
That's interesting.
But I hope they bring her back. I really hope, now that you've mentioned it, I hope that if they can do a sequel, it's an Ant-Man Wasp team up movie. Ant-Man and the Wasp, you know, that'd be.
Yeah, I don't see Evangeline Lilly doing anything like this again unless it's something like that, you know?
So that'll be fun. So we had fun. I had fun. It's a very funny movie.
Yes.
Much more
surprisingly so.
Much more of a straight comedy than anything they've done so far.
And I feel like we say that after all of these Marvel movies.
Well, they're all funny, but this one I think was a comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
I really think it was a comedy first.
Man, I wish Edgar Wright had done. I mean, imagine what Edgar Wright would have done with this.
Right.
You know.
Oh, I get it.
It could have been so much worse. I mean, the ads make it look really boring and stupid. Yes, it's got a fairly simple plot line, but thanks to the casting and just sort of
the jokes,
how they treated each joke, it really is successful. But if you're looking for something that's sort of a big chapter break in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, this is certainly just sort of a nice, you know, side story, and it works really great. I'm looking for it. Will be interesting to see how they fit them into the next.
I'm really looking forward to that. Movies. I mean, a guy like Scott Lang in the middle of a giant superhero battle should be funny.
Be amazing.
Yeah. Did you watch the credits and see the comic thanks?
Yes.
You see Kirkman got a thank
you?
Yes,
I did.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting. But they acknowledged that he worked on the character. So.
Yeah. Probably legally had to.
Yeah. So.
So that
I know nothing about Scott Lang, so it's always been Pym for me, so I think this is a great introduction to the character, and I hope people look more into it.
Well, I'm looking forward to the Eric O'Grady movie eventually.
Yeah.
All right, so that's Ant-Man. You can go to fanboy.com and talk about what you thought about the film there. There'll be a post for this show there, and you can find our weekly podcast, the Pick a Week podcast, where we talk about the week's comics. Ron and my friend Josh talk about those. And we will be back. We'll be back for
what's
the
next
DC Universe animated film in a few weeks. And then we were talking about this, Ron, as we were leaving. When is the next one Captain America? Next year?
Oh, geez.
There's not a winter Marvel movie?
Let's see. I don't. It must be Captain America because that was the tease in at the end of Ant-Man, right?
I mean, it was not Thor. I don't think there's a Marvel movie until.
Let's see. So Ant-Man. So next. Oh, next is Fantastic Four.
But that's not a similar cinematic universe.
No, I know. I'm just saying. But that's the next. You know. That's August 7th. So we'll be doing that.
Oh God.
Let's see.
I have even less interest in that movie than I have.
That does not look very good.
But then the next MCU movie is Captain America next year.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, next it must summer. Be. Yeah.
Long wait.
And they did announce Guardians 2.
Yes.
Yeah,
so that'll be interesting. They better call it Electric Boogaloo. That has to be the title.
No, they already announced that it's Volume 2.
That's lame.
Yeah, I know, but, you know.
All right, so we will be back for all of those things, and until then, I'm not. What?
Wow, what? Wow. No, I was going to say, you know, so it's Fantastic Four, then Deadpool in February, then Batman versus Superman in March, and then Captain America in May. So, yeah.
We're busy.
It's a dead zone after Fantastic Four.
And I also like that we're talking about May of 2016, by the way. You could just shoot me now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. You shut your mouth.
All right, yeah. All right, take us home, Connor.
Until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm Mike. There were nine of us in the photograph. Our secrets hide in the tall grass. You can take them out with an ample blast.
I'm recording as well.
Ron, do you want to do the intros? Or?
I don't even remember. Okay, what is the... you're listening to an iFanboy Special Edition podcast on Marvel's Ant-Man?
Sure.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
All right.
Ready? Three, two...
You're listening to a special edition podcast... You're listening to an iFanboy Special Edition podcast on Marvel's Ant-Man.
Is that the official title?
I don't know. Is it? I assumed it is.
Yeah, that's fine.
Hang on a second. Let me find out.
I think it's just Ant-Man, but...
All right, so let's start. Do it again. Three, two. You're listening to an... three, two.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.